Welcome everyone, welcome back to Conscious Fitness Divine Body. Tonight you're going to have the pleasure to share a vision about the ancient mystery, the mystery school that is going to be unveiled. And tonight we're going to do that with an host that is Kayla Ambrose, who wrote a book, a fantastic book. And so first of all, Kayla, you're here?
Yes, thank you.
Can you hear me well?
Yes, I can hear you fine. Thank you for having me on the show.
Okay, great. Well, Kayla, I need to tell you one thing, because your book came to my hand in a very synchronistic matter. Mm. I was having a meditation about what I needed to put on my show, and I had this inverted pyramid with a number 6 coming. And it's like, okay, I didn't know what it was, what it meant, but I just trusted that, you know, something was going to give me more clarity about it. And then the very next morning, I went to get my mail, which happened to had arrived the night before, but I didn't get it. So here I am getting my mail, and when I pulled out, I received your book. And the way I picked it up, it was upside down, so the pyramid looked inverted, and the number 9 became a number 6.
Oh, that's amazing.
I know, and it was like, okay, so I guess I really need to, there's a message that not only me, but definitely, you know, people who listen to the show are really eager to receive, because it was too, you know, too baha of a type of a synchronicity. So I know, and I'm so excited to have you here, because when I read your book, it took me about 2 hours, because I devoured it. It felt so right because of the teaching that you're bringing in and the message and the way you're saying it. So you know, so down to the point, it's easy to read, it's very easy to understand, even though there's so much power behind and so much depth to it. So we're going to come to talk about it. So tell us a little bit more about you, maybe, to kind of give a little bit more to our listeners about you.
Sure. Thank you. And thank you for that glowing testimonial about the book. I really appreciate that.
That was fantastic.
people ask me, where did I learn these teachings? And I say, first of all, I believe in past lives, and I came back with a lot of this in me for many lifetimes. Mm-hmm. It wasn't something that I just picked up this lifetime and began. Even as a small child, I would go into the libraries and try to teach people and pull out the books on mythology or history and try to correct the books and tell people, this is not quite as it is, here's the history of it. And so I was a precocious child. My poor parents had to put up with so much. And they were very loving and understanding and let me attend all types of religious backgrounds and go to different religions, because I had a fascination with them all. And mm-hmm. I was also born psychic, and they were very understanding with that. It comes every third generation in our family, and I took after mm-hmm. my grandfather, so mm-hmm. they had that side of me as well. And they were very nurturing, so I was very lucky about that.
Mm-hmm.
As I continued on, I fell in love. There's so many different beautiful religions and forms of spirituality, but I really fell in love with the esoteric teachings and the way that they were taught in Eastern philosophy and in Western as well. Mm-hmm. So that's what I drew to and began to teach. And since then, I've gone on to, well, I have a school that is Temple of Stella Maris, where we teach the esoteric teachings. And I write books like the one you read, and have some CDs coming out. And I'm also a spiritual counselor, a paranormal researcher, and the director of the Rhine Research Center, which is a research center that's 70 years old that began doing paranormal and parapsychological research back mm-hmm. in the 1930s with Duke University and continuing on. So I like to cover the gamut there. I like to do science and spirituality, and my hope is to try to bring those together and let them both talk and communicate with each other, because the mm-hmm. mystics have been teaching this for years, mm-hmm. and if we could get science to connect with them and understand it from that side, I think it would help open a lot of doors for other people that would like to understand from the logical standpoint.
Definitely. But we're getting to here, to that point, don't you think? On a wider consciousness, like on a global consciousness, more and more people come down to finding a crossroads in between.
Yes, I like to say many paths, one destination.
I love it, too.
We all have a way of looking at things, and yes. we all need to learn the way we need to learn, but we're all seeking the same destination, which is
yes.
just a closer relationship with ourselves and with the divine.
Definitely.
And whatever way a person chooses to get there is just according to their personality.
Definitely. However, the way you brought it, and, you know, to come back to your book is Nine Life Altering Lessons, The Secrets of the Mystery Schools Unveiled. So can you explain to us, first of all, what is a mystery school?
Sure. Mystery schools have been around since before even recorded history.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, people that, you know the stories of Atlantis and Lemuria and very ancient civilizations, there were mystery schools there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they continued on into Babylon and Sumeria, which had great mystery schools, and as well into all of the Far East. And India has had many wonderful mystery schools, as has China, and Egypt and Greece and continuing
mm-hmm.
on. And what these were schools where the esoteric teachings were taught, and esoteric really means hidden or for the few, and not meaning that only a few could study, but only a few are dedicated enough to kind of devote their lives to these teachings and to go into them.
Mm-hmm.
And the temples that were built were schools where people could come and learn at a soul level who they were,
mm-hmm.
answering those questions, who am I and why am I here? And for people that wanted to explore themselves on a deeper level, on a spiritual level, of what their soul's purpose was here, why they were coming back, what karma had in store for them, what they were meant to learn, the experiences, beyond the titles that we give ourselves,
mm-hmm.
beyond the fact that we were a baker or a mother or you know, whatever career we had or aspirations in life, who are we beyond those things that we know as ourselves as a mother or a sister or a father? And
mm-hmm.
that's what the schools have done, is tried to teach those teachings and take people on a soul journey.
So in the book, you are mentioning nine altering lessons, so life-altering lessons. Those nines are, do you think that they are the nine most important, or do you think that actually if really you get those nines, then really you're getting your good luggage to get on the path?
Well, you would definitely be in good shape if you got the nine lessons and were living them.
Okay.
You'd be in a good place. The book is written for what we call a neophyte in the lessons,
mm-hmm.
and a neophyte means someone new to the teachings, and it's
mm-hmm.
just being introduced. And though, if you look at the book and you look at any of those lessons, to fully understand them and take them on, I think is worthy of anyone at a,
mm-hmm.
you know, a soul level to say that they've accomplished one of those. But they're leading into the next level, which would be called the initiate, where you really begin to take those lessons and not just understand them, but begin to live them or embody them in your life.
Mm-hmm. So one that is very, because I was really looking into Greek at some point, and then the axiom that comes a lot is, as above, so below. Can
yeah.
you explain to us really the meaning of that? Because I think this is so, so very important.
It is. It's a wonderful Hermetic axiom that the Greeks taught, as above, so below.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to kind of explain it in such a short period. I teach almost for a year on this one
mm-hmm.
concept. But
mm-hmm.
to make it as short as I can, basically, we are a microcosm of the macrocosm of the universe.
Uh-huh.
What is above is reflected down into us. As there is a solar system above, there's a solar system within us. The sun is the heart of our universe here and provides the heat and the warmth. The
mm-hmm.
heart inside of us is our sun providing the heat and the warmth
mm-hmm.
and the center of all things. If the sun stops working in the universe, we're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
If our heart stops working, we're in the same kind of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is reflected above and below like that.
Okay.
Also, what we think and what starts above in our higher selves up in the higher planes of existence, what comes from there comes down into us, sort of like you were describing the pyramid pointing the other way.
Mm-hmm.
You have the energy up there. It
mm-hmm.
comes down to a point here into the earth plane, and then the pyramid turns the other way. That point comes in and then spreads down into us, creating it below.
Mm-hmm.
So in an essence, as short as I can, that what you think, what is above, what are on the higher planes, what is the existence there, comes down inside of you and is reflected within you as without, as well. And the saying continues and says, as above, so below, as within, so without, meaning that what you think comes out around you as well.
Very interesting. So you continue in your book with the chapter about the alchemical transformation of the heart, the body, and the mind. So I am very interested, of course, with, you know, the title of my show, Divine Body, Conscious Fitness, Divine Body. I'm really into really finding these cross, these pathways in between our mind and our body and finding the right balance. And so what is this alchemical transformation that you're talking about?
Well, there are many transformations that happen as you change your, as you go through the lessons here in the book.
Mm-hmm.
When you learn, first of all, to deal with your emotions and understand the effect that they have on your body as well as your mind and your spirit, that's an important lesson that we teach, is control of the emotions. That doesn't mean not to have emotions, but it means to be in control of them, meaning you could no longer say to someone else, you made me angry.
Mm-hmm.
You understand that you choose to be angry with what someone puts towards you.
Mm-hmm.
And you can choose to let that emotion go through you and then release it and not hold on to that anger. Mm-hmm. Once you learn that and are in control of your emotions, then you learn to think about your thoughts and what thoughts you put out and project in your world. And you continue on this journey of the nine lessons, learning these things and how to elevate your conscious mind into your higher self. As you do that, again, that's reaching into the higher planes, into the higher self, there's a reaction that comes down below into the physical body here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
What happens at that time as you go into the higher self, changes happen within your body. Your energy rises, the kundalini rises, it goes up into the Ida and the Pingala, and there's actually a dew that's created that drips down and helps to open the third eye.
Mm.
As you continue there and different things happen, we call it alchemical, which is the chemistry actually changing. There's different reactions within the body where the body itself is transmuted, and it begins to have a glow that comes off of you. Your aura actually changes, and you have a glow. And this has been described in history and so many times. It's been painted where you see what they would call saints or people that were very religious or special. They would have a halo painted around them.
Mm-hmm.
That halo is actually the aura that's become golden, that's become a golden light that's happened by the alchemical reactions inside the body as the soul has purified the body and it has become more special and more connected with the higher self. And that's what they were trying to draw in those paintings that they couldn't quite replicate.
Difficult. all right, so that makes total sense. So we can say that self-discovery creates self-empowerment.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so I guess this is where the man knows his self comes up.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Absolutely. That was over many of the temples. Man, know thyself, and I will know God, which is, again, talking about going within. And there's a wonderful book I love by James Allen called As a Man Thinketh that was written in the early 1900s and talks about that. As you think, there you are.
There you are.
This has been repeated in so many teachings. Know not that you are creators. This message has been given to us so many times saying that we have that power with our thoughts to what we create.
So there is, obviously, according to the Mystery's Course, there's universal truth out there.
Yes.
And if we can uncover them or unveil them and understand them and actually live them, we are on the path to self-empowerment. So what are those universal truths?
Well, the universal truths, and I say this too, first of all, before I ever talk about that, and if you've read my book, like you mentioned that you had read it, you'll remember that I put, don't believe a word I say.
And that was one thing that I liked, because you know what, I said exactly the same thing to the students I have. It's like, you know, you have to feel it. If it feels right, then maybe there's something there that you need to hook on and follow your line. If you don't, you know, there it is. This is not, you have to just maybe put it up and then continue on. So it's funny because, when I read that at the beginning, it was like, there you go. There's another, you know, synchronistic piece of the puzzle that is putting me to cross paths with you. So very interesting, very cool. So go ahead. I'm sorry I cut you off.
Oh, no, but yes, I agree. And I say that because I think there's been too many people over too many lifetimes saying, this is the way, or this is the right thing, or follow this, or do this only, read this only. And that's not how I teach, and it's not how the esoteric teachings are ever taught. Mm-hmm. It's about a personal experience, a journey. And I even say I'm not really a teacher. I just help people remember who they are through a series of conversations, or whether you read a book, or whatever that you do.
Mm-hmm.
With that, when you hear a universal truth, it seems to ring inside of you. It feels true. And we see these universal truths replicated in different religions, even though each one puts their own personal spin on it. Maybe it was political agendas or needs for control or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, love is the greatest power that there is. That's a universal truth.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be spun in many different ways, but it is a universal truth. And when you break that down, many teachings describe that as that only the good is real.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because I know on this earth plane things seem so bad sometimes, and fear seems incredibly real in all the things that we fear.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, they are just the shadow side of things, which are our own creation in many ways that we create on this plane. And love is the highest power that there is and always will be. And that's a universal truth.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is that we are all one. We're a sea of energy floating in vibratory fields, and we are all connected. And mystics have talked about this forever, but now science is showing it. Quantum physics is beginning to look at this. They're beginning to see that we have no beginning and ending.
Mm-hmm.
Everything expands. And
the
only difference between each of us are just the way our atoms are arranged, just tiny molecules, a little bit of different, that kind of form into me and make me a body and form into you and make you a body.
Mm-hmm.
But yet if you and I were standing next to each other and people would see the auras and see our energy at that level, they would see how we would begin to mix together and share and have that connection.
Mm-hmm.
And the Huna teachings teach that. As soon as you enter in with someone, with a thought or a prayer or energy, you stay forever connected with a cord with that person.
Mm-hmm.
So each person we talk to, each person we spend time with, we connect with cords that way. We stay somehow connected. And when you understand that, then you realize we are all one. And whether you live in love or you live in anger or in fear, you're not just affecting yourself, but you're affecting everyone around you in the world. And it's a giant connection. And there's no surprise, I think, when they talk about mothers and children and when it's time for the child to move out and they say, we're cutting the cord. And you're releasing that a little bit. And not for permanently, but you have to let go of some of that protective energy.
Yes.
And so there's so many like that are universal truths. And one that people don't know or think about as much, they always, you know, you hear about the ones you should work on. But one of them is we are all greater than we remember ourselves to be.
Mm-hmm.
People don't realize how much energy and creative power they were given to them.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could connect with that and realize that when we connect with that higher energy and in love, there's nothing that can stop us from being all that we're meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think humanity is getting closer to understanding that. And we seem to be hard-headed and like to go through negative experiences to figure it out first. But at least, you know, I see us getting there every day a little closer.
Good. And I think you're right. I think we all start to feel, even people who have maybe not as sensitive yet to it, there's this intuitive knowledge that something is happening, and I think you're right. It's coming on a wider scale, and that's what, you know, it makes me jump onto the next chapter, which I do like, because it's talk about magic, and you're talking about a magical universe that we are living in, and I think that if we actually all realize the magic into it, that we really are magicians, and we could actually create with that magic, then you know that this power could be unleashed to do so many great things. But can you tell us a little bit more about why you believe, why it was believed that the universe is a magical place?
Well, the easiest answer would be that we see so many times with our thoughts what we do create. And that's very powerful in itself, to think of that as a form of alchemy. That if you think of something long enough, it will happen. You will create it to be. so many people don't have that connection at that time, but it does exist and it always has, and that's what people have done with magic, whether they were wishing it to be. Even prayer is a form of that. When you pray for something, you're sending out that energy and asking it to respond.
Mm-hmm.
The magical universe is there in so many ways. We move mm-hmm. in cycles. And, you know, mystics, shamans, people that are connected, all of this time, they've always understood that there are certain times and cycles when we can connect with that more and greater, that it's presented down to here on Earth as a gift. Mm-hmm. The Hindus talk about the age we live in and Kali Yuga and how, you know, we're beginning to pass out of that time into the next. We're moving, some people say, into the age of Aquarius. There are certain times that are tracked with astrology and other types of trackings like that, and the Mayans, and they talk about their calendar. There are certain cycles where that magic is more powerful in the universe and we can pull it together, and this has been studied in so many ways. I've studied traditional feng shui for years with a Chinese and a master and one from Hong Kong,
mm-hmm.
and talked about how the emperors protected this power and this energy and understood it, the powerful energy that's within the earth plane, and when that's connected with time and space and the energies from the universe above, what we can do with that. So there's so many forms of magic that are available to us.
Mm-hmm.
But many people in this lifetime, they're not really wanting to connect with magic in that way or at that level. But when they begin to understand that even just if they were to work on themselves and go within and realize that they are creating something with the energy they put out, with the thoughts they have, with what they do, that they can make their own universe magical in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're creating anything that they want to. And when
mm-hmm.
you realize that your thoughts can do that, then the possibility of what you can create is infinite, meaning you don't have to settle for the way things are.
Mm-hmm.
It takes some self-knowledge to then go, well, I can't blame my parents anymore, or I can't
mm-hmm.
blame this or that. I can create today, and I can decide what my quest is going to be and what my journey is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can free yourself from those, what I call, lower levels of thought of energy where you believe this is all that's meant to come to you,
mm-hmm.
and step into the higher levels. And when that dawns, when that glimmer of truth opens, then that means anything is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in some ways years ago, that's what the United States was trying to teach, you know, give us, come here and you could kind of be and do anything. It was kind of one of those teachings in that point.
You're totally right.
And if that could be understood at a greater level, at the esoteric level, and everyone could realize that,
mm-hmm.
there's no stopping us what we could do as humanity,
mm-hmm.
the wonderful things we could create.
Definitely. So from there, here's my next question. I have students who come to me and ask me, well, I want to know my soul purpose. Like with the belief that something has been put in, like there's a seed before I reincarnate. It's like I'm here for a reason. I'm here for a purpose that is going to vibrate with really my true self. And as long as I don't have it, then I won't be fulfilled. But then on the other side, we know that we can create whoever we want with unlimited possibilities. So here's the question that comes to me, is brought to me, is like, how do I create myself? How do I create myself in the possibility that my soul purpose was for?
That's a great question. You know, it's like when I learned as a little girl about love, I remember my mother explaining to me that you can't chase love. You can't go hunt for love. You can be a loving person, and when love is meant to find you, it does. And we see that with friends all the time, that if they're single and they're looking, and whenever they're looking hard, what do people say? They say, stop looking. When you stop looking, love will find you.
You're right.
It's the same way with your soul's purpose. What I teach people to do is to look within and to change the energy that's happening within you. When you change it and you alter it, and then you spend each day living in your highest and best, just personally doing your highest and best at whatever it is that you do. Monks are taught this. They're taught if they're sweeping the floor, they do it with joy and
mm-hmm.
reverence. They're taught,
mm-hmm.
you know, if they're cleaning, if they're working in the garden, whatever they do it with complete joy and with the highest and best thoughts and energy.
Mm-hmm.
When you attune yourself to that and you're living your highest and best, that's when the magic happens, because the universe puts it right in front of you and you don't even have to look for it.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, a series of synchronistic events start to happen and lead you from one thing to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And because your mind is open and you're ready to receive whatever comes your way, instead of that urgency of running and hunting and trying to grab it and
mm-hmm.
and cling to it, that's when it becomes elusive, just like love. You can't make someone love you. You can't make these things happen. If you change within, it will flow to you. And
so there's
and that's,
a surrendering.
That's the law of attraction.
Yes. There's a surrendering part that needs to be happening.
Yes.
To, a surrendering part of the control, like not finding, like you said, I'm not going to find it, I'm not going to seek for it, I'm not going to reach for it, it's just going to be unveiled to me.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And rather than looking at it as one thing, it might be a series of 100 things you do in this lifetime.
Yeah.
It might be the conversation you have with someone in a grocery store where you say something kind to them and you don't realize that it's changed their entire life until you go to the other side and you're reviewing your Akashic records and see what that did for that person. It's the smallest moments sometimes that can be just as empowering as an important as these big grand things that we think we're doing.
Yeah.
And the rest will come too. Everyone does have a destiny. I do believe that. And I believe every soul that came back here at this lifetime specifically chose, and it's quite an honor to be here because we are ushering in a new age at this time. And we all do have very important destinies to do, but they will unveil themselves in time if we do the inner work on ourselves and allow it to be. But it's always not just one big, you know, aha moment where, you know, the angels are flying down, the clouds are opening, and the sun shines, and you're like, here it is. It's, you know, it's kind of a series of things, and we still have to work for it here.
Yes. So what does awakening to your divine self and sacred power mean? Is that what you were just saying? Be within, get, like, come within and really live to your highest potential, being happy in what you're doing, and then the doors are going to be more opening and things are going to start to happen. Is it that divine self? That's what it means?
To me, it does. I start every morning in meditation and praying for I ask for my highest and best, that I live in my highest and best, and that I do my best to do that. And I end every day in prayer, going over the day, and anyone that I think I've slighted in any way, I either make a note to apologize to them or ask their forgiveness, or if I can't reach them, I'll go in meditation and send their higher self an apology for me or forgiveness. And what I do in between those two moments of the day, living and trying to do my highest and best, I don't worry about what that's going to be. I let that come. The point is to remember who you are and what you're trying to be, which many people describe that we're a spiritual being having a human experience. So we try to hold on to that and remember. And so it's so easy. Life does get so hectic and pull us in so many directions and make us lose our tempers or get frustrated or whatever else. But if we can try to stay centered and come back to that and remember that we're having this experience, we're able to look at it differently. And what I look at every day, I look at every person I meet as my teacher, and I look at everyone as having shared something with me of their wisdom and taught me something, and even an experience that was less than delightful.
Yes,
so, you know, we want to call it negative. I learned something from that. I learned something about me and how I'm, you know, reacting to it, and I learned something about everyone else there at the same time. So in that moment, every moment is sacred. Everything I do is sacred. Everywhere I walk is sacred. Because I'm respecting all paths, all people, and all time here that we're here. So when you do that, there is a sacred power that comes to that, because what you begin to radiate back touches people in that way as well. And I have so many people that will come up and just talk to me. I'm in a store, I don't know anyone, and they just want to tell me their story and have me hug them, and I'm just in the store shopping, but they're reacting to the energy of something calm and something like I want to talk to this woman and feel. And if I can do that for another soul, then I'm very happy. I've done something good that day.
Definitely.
But I'm still walking on my path, in my power, you know, doing what I'm supposed to do.
So where does the self-indulgence, or I would say self-forgiveness, I have some of our students coming, and it's true that there's this, even me, when I remember, you know, learning some teaching, I was looking at my teacher like, they got it right, that's it, they're just like happy all the time, and life is just pink and super fun for them, and, you know, never down, never negative, never. And so you know, at some point, I remember asking one of my teachers, so how is it to be happy all the time? And so I remember she said, oh, I don't know. I don't know yet. But, you know, it was one of those things. It's like realizing that, like you said, we are a spiritual being living a human experience. Therefore, there's going to be a human side, you know, obviously experienced in it. And there's how important is it to be kind to ourselves? That was my question.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's so important what you said, that we are still having a human experience, and that's what we chose to have. So the point shouldn't be to try to avoid that. The point should be to live that and experience that, and we are going to have ups and downs. And it's not about being happy every moment of the day. Sometimes we need to feel those other feelings or emotions because they teach us something. And what I always see it as it's not about trying to avoid. That's what they used to do. They'd go in caves and never come out. Well, you know, it's easy if you're in a cave and someone's bringing you rice every day and you don't have to talk to anyone. You can be in a good mood. But, you know, it's not, we're in a different place now, and we're in our evolvement. And now we have to evolve with handling traffic and road rage and drivers and politics and families and everything that comes with it. So we're evolving again to a new level, and there's going to be stress with that in times when you just, you know, want to say something or do something, and you're not going to be in a good mood, but you can learn from that too. But what I think is so important is that it's okay to have the emotion. Don't beat yourself up because you had an emotion. Just don't hold on to it. It's the guilt that is the useless emotion. Having guilt about, if you don't like something that you did that day, then do something about it. Like I said, I make a list at night. If there's someone I need to apologize to, I pick up the phone, I call them, or I see them the next day and tell them, or I talk to their higher self. If there's something you wish you had done differently or better, then take action. That's the best thing you can do to replace it, and you'll feel better. Take action and do something different the next day. And even if you can't do it to that same person, maybe you were driving on the road and you felt pressured and rushed, so you didn't let a car in, you know, because you wanted, you thought that everyone was getting ahead of you. Well, maybe the next day you'll be more relaxed and say, I'll get there when I get there, and yes, I'm going to let this car in on the side. And just notice how you feel better. Your body feels better. You're less tense. Your mind is more relaxed, and it'll be a payoff for you, and that's really when you begin to see it and see the connection and say, where do I want to be? What makes me happier? And that's the choice. Being happy is a choice. It's not really a state of being that you just float on. It's a choice you make.
Definitely.
I laugh at myself all the time for being a fool and things I do.
It's funny because the first conversation I had with my now husband, but at the time I didn't know him, but the first conversation we had, it was about 3 hours conversation about happiness, and how I was telling him, yes, of course happiness is a choice, and he was telling me, no, it's not a choice, you're just born like that or not. and so we have this conversation for 3 hours, and then, you know, 3 months later we get married, and then 4 years later he's telling me, oh, don't remember, you need to remember, happiness is a choice, so you'd better be happy today. It's like, oh yeah, that's true. Cannot get away from it. So, yes, but that's true. I think you're right. Happiness is a choice, as any, you know, emotions is. Like one of my teaching with my students is for 1 week they have to wake up in the morning and decide what emotions they want to experience. And so they are, this, you know, whatever it is. And it doesn't have to be happy. It can be nervous. It can be whatever, to experience it fully. And just decide if it does feel good, then they keep it. If it does not, then they let it go, because they really have experienced it and recognized that it feels good or not. And they actually, I did that, and I realized where, you know, the pendulum goes, and I don't want to go there because I remember it doesn't feel good.
Absolutely. And the body is such a great teacher for us to help us understand that. When people talk about having butterflies in their stomach, or they feel like they've just been kicked in the gut, they're talking about the solar plexus and the way it's processing the emotions and the way they feel, or whether they have a headache or some kind of disharmony in the body. It tries to tell us when we're not doing what feels right vibrationally for us. It's such a wonderful teacher in that way.
So when you... your book, when you started your book, of course we talked about the mystery school, so, which, you know, vibrates back to ancient times, And you were saying that only the brave souls, were willing to delve into those teachings. How much do you think people need to be courageous to, in order to really work it through, be willing to just keep moving no matter what? How much courage do they need?
Well, I think it's a personal answer for each person, and mm-hmm. I can tell you my early students that come in, when they first do the first couple of lessons I give them, and I call it crossing a line in the sand, and I say, mm-hmm. okay, if you go beyond this point, you're crossing a line in the sand, you're going to become aware of
yes.
what your actions are doing in your life.
Yes.
And as one student explained to me, once you know, you know, and then you can't go back. And that's really what it does, is it opens it up and you begin to understand the result of your actions.
Mm-hmm.
It does take a bit of courage to do that,
mm-hmm.
because it does mean, for a lot of people, rewriting and re-understanding everything that they were taught or believed
mm-hmm.
in or were told.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about a religious thing or changing any of your beliefs. We say that. It's not about anything else. But when you become responsible for all your actions and why you choose to act that way, and stop blaming anyone else, the world, the state of the economy, the way you were raised, the school you went to, the friends, the person who did something bad to you when you were 7, whatever it is, when you decide to say, those things no longer affect me, I am
mm-hmm.
the person I'm choosing to be today, that takes some courage
mm-hmm.
to do that and to stand mm-hmm. out there. And
mm-hmm.
I think most everyone in the world's capable of doing it. It's just
mm-hmm.
simply a desire if you're ready to look within.
Because,
yes. you know, the old ego rolls out and says,
yes.
wait a minute, this woman's talk. We don't like this.
It's
easier. Let's stay angry. Let's blame people. We don't like the way this sounds.
Uh-huh.
And the ego's very good at
mm-hmm.
talking us into other things. And that's where the real bravery comes in, when you decide to wrestle the ego. And then if you're in a family or a social situation where people like living that way, some people live in areas where an entire area of the city or country they live in is like that,
mm-hmm.
then people are wondering, what's wrong with you? Why are
mm-hmm.
you thinking this way? What do you mean you think the world's good? And
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
don't you see what's going on around you? So then
mm-hmm.
you start to make people around you uncomfortable, and that takes a bit of courage as well to stand true to your beliefs when people are wondering what you're up to.
Yeah, so that's what comes next. Only the good is real. And you explain in this passage in your book that fear may appear to be real, but it is not.
Yes.
It is a series of perception based on experiences which have created an emotion. So obviously most of our work into our path, our esoteric path and this awakening, is really to realize that fear is an illusion. It's really to put all those walls down, realizing that it's only fog and we can really walk through. It's not going to be, it's not dangerous, it's not, nothing is going to happen.
Absolutely, and I have so many students that argue with this, saying, "That's
mm-hmm.
don't you know, real is real, this is reality."
Mm-hmm.
So I give them the scenario. I say, okay, tell me what's reality here. Let's go to the park, and we're standing at the park, and we see in front of us a little boy who's 4 years old, and he's holding a red balloon. Now, we're all in a circle, and we're looking at this little boy. Well, one person is standing there going, oh, I remember when I was a little boy, and I was in the park. I loved that time. And another person standing with us is going, where is that boy's mother? Why is he alone in that park? What's going to happen to him?
Uh-huh.
And another person is thinking, oh, I remember that song, 99 Red Balloons, from the 80s, and that reminds me of the Cold War. And, and another person is thinking, when he lets go of that balloon, that's going to pollute the earth and choke a bird somewhere. Who's taking you know, charge of this?
Uh-huh.
And someone else is thinking about, oh, I don't even like children. So which is the reality there? Which one is the truth about the situation? Well, there is no just one truth. It's all perception. It's all based on our emotions, our experiences, our social upbringing, as to how we're reacting to that same vision of a little boy holding a balloon. Some people find it peaceful. Some people find it annoying. Some people are worried about where his mother is. Which one's the truth?
Mm-hmm.
It's all perception.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing. That's what fear is. Fear is based on our perceptions of things. We're so quick to judge something being a good experience or a bad experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yet if I could look at my whole life in total, not as I am right now living through it, I would say that some of the most perceived bad experiences in my life were the most powerful and life-altering for me and mm-hmm. gifts in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
Same with everything like that. So mm-hmm. when we have those perceptions, we don't understand. We only have fear, which we also call as anger or things that we're upset about, because fear is a loss of control, an unknown, not knowing what's going to happen, and that's
mm-hmm.
what causes fear.
Mm-hmm.
And that is our perception of something, of believing that things will be out of our control or something will happen that we want to call unpleasant at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes according to history and times and cultures and societies. What one person would call perfectly normal, another culture would
yes.
find repulsive.
Yes.
So how can we judge that? So really, we go back to it, that only the good is real, and the rest of it is just perceptions of things
mm-hmm.
that we're uncomfortable or afraid of, which is
mm-hmm.
what fear is.
Mm-hmm. So we, in your book as well, you mentioned something that I think needs to be talked about. It's loving someone at a soul level does not mean loving their actions.
Yes.
So can you elaborate a little on that?
Sure. At a soul level, we're all one. We're all in this together. We come back down many lifetimes to learn things,
mm-hmm.
and we have karma to play out and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we step back down to this earth body, we have different things that we play out, and we have different things that we choose to do. I can love someone on a soul level and understand that they're doing the best they can at where they're at. They may be a younger soul. They may be an angry soul. They're going through whatever they need to do in their lifetime. But their actions may not be ones that I harmonize with. They might choose a path of violence. They might choose to not love and respect another human being. And I don't love those actions, and I don't love what they're doing, and I don't have to accept those actions. But I can love them in their higher level as a soul, knowing that that soul is in some form of pain that's
mm-hmm.
causing it to act out in that way,
mm-hmm.
and that that's what it's doing, and that hopefully that soul is going to get through this lesson soon, and I can hope for the best that that soul is going through that, because we all have done that in one lifetime or another where we've acted out in anger or in pain.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I may not be choosing to do that in this lifetime, I certainly in other lifetimes have, as all of us have, as that's how we continue to learn here on the earth plane. So
mm-hmm.
it takes us out of keeping hate inside of us or anger.
Yes.
And just understanding that that soul is trying to evolve and it's not quite where we are.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we don't have to love that person's actions or necessarily keep
mm-hmm.
them in our life,
mm-hmm.
especially if they're doing harm to us or someone in our family or in some relationship
mm-hmm.
we're in. But we can wish their soul the best.
So would it be the concept of forgiveness, of true forgiveness?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that resonates pretty well with me, too. One thing that I like a lot about your book as well, it makes it very interactive and entertaining, is there's a bunch of questions that makes you think, and think is good. However, one student of mine came to me one day and said, they had as well a bunch of questions, and they were telling me, and I was telling them, try to find the answer coming from within. This is your authentic self answer that you want to have. It is not coming from your ego self based on fear. And so the students were telling me, well, how do you know that the answer is actually going to be that one? And, you know, if you, like, one of your questions that I have right now with me, it was about the law of abundance, and do you frequently give to another with no thought of reciprocation? How much honesty and integrity do you have to put in your work in order to really move forward in your learning?
Yes. Well, and I'll try to. I think if there's two questions there, I'll try to answer
both
of them. One with the student that asked, how do you know if that's the right answer?
Mm-hmm.
So it's more about understanding that it's not about knowing the right answer always at that time.
Mm-hmm.
If it resonates with you at that time,
yeah.
then it's right for you at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But in the esoteric teachings, we call it peeling back the onion, which
mm-hmm.
means that just like we move in a cycle with the seasons, you know, fall, winter, spring, summer, we keep going. We shouldn't look at the teachings as a straight line, getting from A to Z. We're moving in spirals and in circles, and you're peeling back that onion. So even what you think you know, even when you think you've got it and you've learned it, you'll learn as an esoteric student that the more you evolve and the more that you grow, that when you peel back the layer of the onion again, that answer will change for you again as you know more.
Mm-hmm.
So don't try to worry about knowing everything that's right at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Answer the question to the best of your ability, but
mm-hmm.
realize that that can change, and always mm-hmm. be open to change, because change is all that really exists.
That's true.
And so the answer will evolve over time as you evolve, and that's just an important thing to know, not to stick to just one set belief.
Mm-hmm.
The second question, I'm sorry, can you repeat that for me again? Going
That was, when you said, like an example for your question that you had, do you frequently give to another with no sort of reciprocation? How much honesty and integrity do you have to be willing to put into your work in order to move forward into your enlightenment, your path?
Definitely, and that's powerful, because what it does is release you. So many people give gifts for the wrong reason.
Yes.
They want that emotional response of,
mm-hmm.
oh, thank you, or it's, you know, they want to feel that emotion from another person.
Mm-hmm.
And they're giving it to try to feel something there, or to create that energy, or
mm-hmm.
to get that of what they want. And that's why people really put so much pressure on themselves during the holiday seasons and
mm-hmm.
birthdays and other occasions,
mm-hmm.
trying to get that. Really what that is getting acceptance from another person.
Yes.
Because we're not feeling that inside, that self-acceptance. So a powerful way to release yourself of that and to understand the law of abundance is to give with no thought of reciprocation, and almost an anonymous gift where the person doesn't even know that it comes from you. When you
mm-hmm.
can give at that level, there's a level of joy that is greater than anything you've experienced in any other way. It,
mm-hmm.
And what it does is every time you do that, it gives back to you, because it's
mm-hmm.
a freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And I first learned to do that when, at a time I was a single parent and had very little money and was feeling very down. And I had my son in the car, and I had taken him to get, at that time, years and years ago, going to get like a Happy Meal. That was all I could do. Take him to one of those little places and get the Happy Meal and play with him. And, you know, I was feeling sorry for myself. Oh, I wouldn't, blah, 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 I have nothing, blah. Well, I'm in the line there waiting to get that, and look over, and I see a lady in a dumpster digging for food.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw her, I just, it just hit me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the car. I have a job
mm-hmm.
taking care of my son.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I to be feeling bad about
mm-hmm.
something like that?
Mm-hmm.
So I took the rest of the money that I had that week until payday, and I bought a sandwich at the place, and I put the money in a bag, and I parked the car, and I walked over to her and gave her the bag with the food
mm-hmm.
in it.
Mm-hmm.
And as I drove off, she opened it, and she saw the money, and I saw her face just in shock. And I didn't want to be there for it. I didn't want her to have to say thank you. I wasn't doing it for that reason. I was
yeah.
doing it for me, realizing I am wealthy. I have
yes.
the ability to make money. I have love. I have a child that loves me.
Yes.
I have all this given to me, and that forever changed me. And my
yes.
son, who was very small at the time, still remembers it to this day, and it
wow.
had a huge effect on him as well, of where he became a giver his whole life. And
how full of a statement for parents.
Well,
yeah,
that woman made me the richest woman in the world.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have lunch to eat for the rest of the week. I worked through lunch with my stomach growling every day, and no money to buy anything else. And you know, I had a moment of, was I crazy to do that? But I was like, no, it felt so good. I would do that
yes.
again a million times.
Uh-huh.
And that's what the freedom comes when you give without thought of reciprocation, with no
yes.
thought of what is it going to be or how they're going to react. You just give
yes.
from the heart.
And there's also the giving with the feeling of, like, oh, I have to do that. Like, I remember, I'm going to give you an example. I used to, about 6-7 years ago, I used to do personal training, and I could not ask for more than $15 for an hour to train people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, where some people around us like, are you crazy? You know, people should pay $50-$60 an hour to have you doing it, blah, 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 blah. And I had that feeling. It's like, well, you know, I don't want the money to be a gatekeeper from people to learn more about their body and you know, and know more about themselves. However, I had probably as well as feel like I'm not worthy of much more than $15 an hour. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's the giving, like it seems like I was giving them a favor by allowing them to get this teaching and this time for $15. However, it was coming from a place of fear for me.
Yes, and I think women struggle with that more than men do because we're mm-hmm. we're taught differently. Where mm-hmm. men are taught more for business and to go get it and to do that, and women are taught to be more nurturing and loving and giving, mm-hmm. and it's very hard. But mm-hmm. that does have to change because that term has been abused. It's not love of money is the root of all evil. They say that money is the root of all evil. It's mm-hmm. really love of money is the root of all evil. If you love money
yes.
more than other things, that's when it doesn't go well.
Yes.
But having money in abundance is it's in nature everywhere. There's mm-hmm. a saying that nature abhors a vacuum. And
mm-hmm.
if you look in a field and you make a clearing, and you give it time, nature will fill that hole back up. It's
mm-hmm.
a very abundant world here.
Yes.
And it's meant to come to us. And if you do what you love, the money will follow as long as you say, as you believe in yourself and believe that you're worthy. But if you don't, you'll stop the flow as well.
Yes.
And another important thing, too, is tithing. And people have misunderstood tithing. In the old teachings, of course, people tithe, like to charities or things like that. But tithing was also meant that you give out of joy to
mm-hmm.
someone who helped you in your life. Maybe it was a teacher. Maybe it was someone that did something that, you know, really helped you on your way.
Mm-hmm.
And you would tithe to those people to help them go do what they do best. It wasn't
yes.
just people who were poor and in need and charity. That was a different type. And when
mm-hmm.
people learn that, when they can give at that level and just give to people freely,
mm-hmm.
they'll be surprised because the side effect is it keeps coming back to you. Every time I try to give some away, it triples and comes back to me.
Yes.
But if you do it for that reason, it won't. But if you do so cheerfully, it just does, and in the most mysterious ways.
Yes. That's very true. It's very powerful. I mean, talk about the magic right there.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. So, Kayla, we're getting to the 3-4 minutes left for our show. It's unbelievable. There's already 51 minutes going by. It's fun when we have fun. Tell us where we can find you. You have a website. You have also a mystery school that you may want to talk about where you can find more information about, too.
Yeah, thank you. The mystery school is the Temple of StellaMaris.org.
Mm-hmm.
And Stella is STELLA. Maris is M like Mary,
mm-hmm.
ARIS.org. And that will take you to the school. And an easy website to find just about the book is 9lessons.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll take you for information about the book. And that's an easier one to type sometimes to get to. And then there's also a website about me, which is just my name, which is Kayla, K-A-L-A,
mm-hmm.
Ambrose, AmBrose.com.
Mm-hmm.
And any of those websites, take your pick, will get you on, take you on the path and get you to all those things.
Okay, great. So you're teaching through your school, it's like a class school, or is that as well, there's like a possibility of online?
There, right now it's a school in a building where I'm
okay.
located here in North Carolina.
Okay.
And then I wrote, my students encouraged me to write a book, which I did, with the one we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And since then I've had so many requests from people. They want a workbook of things to do, so I'm trying
Very
to work
cool.
on that to get out. But I'm also coming out with a line of CDs and guided meditations and
mm-hmm.
the teachings on CD as well.
Very
and then
good.
From what they tell me, the next step is that I'm going to be doing online teachings and webinars
Perfect.
Where you can interact and have live chats, and that will be
cool.
coming out in 2009.
All right, so we'll be on, and we'll be talking about it. Thank you so
Wonderful.
Much, Kayla. It was so much information about, you know, the true path and how it feels good. And really, listeners, I encourage you to get the book. Go and get it. You can get it online as well, Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble, I think, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Or any local bookstore, you can ask for it and they'll order it.
There you go.
All the major distributors.
Very cool. I love the book cover. It was very funny when I opened it. It's like, oh my God, that was my vision. Oh, I guess.
I love that story. That's my favorite story of all time, I think. I just want to thank you so much for your time. You're a wonderful, wonderful show and a wonderful interview, and many, many blessings to you.
Oh, thank you so much, Kella. I thank you so much for your time again, and then and hopefully we're getting, we will get you again on the show to talk about your workbook and your online version of your school, and many blessings to you, too.
Thank you.
You have a good evening. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, listeners. Thank you so much for spending your time. Conscious Fitness and Divine Body is done for this week, but we'll get back together next week with a powerful show with a Zen, someone who was a Zen monk at some point, and his name is Stéphane Bodian. He wrote a book called Wake Up Now, and you're going to be on for the ride of your life with his book. So stay tuned to bbsradio.com, and talk to you next week. Have a good night. Bye.
Can I fly away back to yesterday? Some